This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
Here we go then, it's win or bust time for Manchester City. One game of the season to go, and the knowledge that 3 points against Aston Villa will guarantee Pep Guardiola his fourth Premier League title in 5 years. Anything less and the door will be open for Liverpool to steal in and take the crown instead. So how are you feeling ahead of Sunday's game? Probably a little better had Riyad Mahrez stuck that penalty away against West Ham at the weekend, but we can't have everything, can we? It's still in City's hands at least. On today's Blue Moon podcast, we'll be gearing up for that final day nail-biter by checking in with Frankie Maguire from All Villa No Filler, and we'll take a look back at how important that fight back in the second half at the London Stadium really was given the circumstances. We'll also hear from Howard Hocking for the final time this term, plus we've got our heads together to come up with the alternative moments of the season, so stay tuned for that. I'm David Mooney, with me for this one I've got two City fans from statcity.co.uk. It's Adam Carter.
Hello.
And from One Football, it's Dan Burke.
Hello David, how are you doing?
Can I answer that on Sunday evening?
You can, yeah.
Because I kind of get the impression that's how we're all feeling at the moment. Let's start with the West Ham game, though. Adam, it's the question is, heroic point, or was it a good solution to a problem that should never have existed?
Well, can I absolutely cop out and say that I'll answer you on Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening for that one as well? Because I think in isolation, it was a great comeback. But putting my negative head on for a second, that could be the result that, you know, contributed to us not winning the league earlier, or certainly in the grand scheme of things, it could be the one that got away. So if we just try to take this game in isolation, you're 2-0 down at half time. It's much publicised that City's record of being 2-0 down at half time in Premier League games is rubbish. And the fact that we've kind of almost put that to bed by bringing, I think it was the second draw or something from that position, then you've got to take the positives. We knew before the game that we only had to draw to like stay in contention, to keep it in our hands. But when you go 2-0 down in that game, then it becomes a bit more of the panic stations, and the attitude starts to shift a bit more. Because before the game, I was thinking a draw's fine, I'm happy with that. But then when you go 2-0 down, you're clawing a draw back from a losing position, it kind of feels like a defeat in a way, in my weird warped version of it anyway.
But what about, like, you've gone 2-0 down, you fought back to 2-2, and then you've been given a penalty, Adam, come on.
I forgot about that. I'd actually forgotten about that. Now it feels like an absolute defeat now when we've had a penalty and missed it. Thank you, David.
Sorry, I'm just here to get people's feelings. Dan, at halftime, how far had your head come off? Because I'll be honest, mine was bouncing down Deansgate. It was like I was all over the place.
Yeah, I was in a pit of absolute despair. I stayed off Twitter at halftime. I went and sat on the balcony and just had a good long think to myself. And I was actually thinking, I was like, I feel like crying. I'm not going to cry now, but if we lose this game, I think I'll probably cry at full time, just have a little weep to myself. But yeah.
There's a lot to be said for a good think, isn't there? You know, just sitting down and having a good think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I might be in the minority in this, but I didn't think City played that badly in the first half. You know, aside from the two goals, which were really bad, I thought City controlled the game pretty well. All right, they didn't create an awful lot. So it was annoying to be 2-0 down at half time because I felt like it was a bit undeserved, really. And I was thinking, there's no chance we're getting back into this now. We're losing this game. And I was almost thinking to myself, maybe a consolation goal, maybe we just take that now, and that will chip away at the goal difference a little bit and make things maybe, you know, slightly easier if it comes down to some mad shootout between us and Liverpool on the final day. So to then get that goal back early in the first half was like a big boost. And then to get the second goal was great. And at 2-2, I was like, I'll take this now. A draw will do us. It just means we've got to win on the final day and that's it. And then to get the penalty and not score it, I wasn't really that disappointed. I was still quite okay with the draw at full time, and it still leaves us in a good position, but it could have been a lot worse, couldn't it?
Yeah, it could have been a lot better, though. Could have been a lot better. I guess that's the message of today's show. I mean, I'm gonna try and take your negative hat off, Adam, and put a positive one on instead. Because City were 2-0 down at half time. That means the final 45 minutes that they played against West Ham, they won the second half 2-0. They've got some crucial momentum back now going into that final game. If you'd have taken that first half performance and gone, okay, that's how we're going into the final game, you may be a little worried. But after that second half and the way they played in the second half and the way they looked like the old City again in the second half, you kind of go, well, okay, maybe the first 45 was just a little blip and we're back to normal now.
This therapy session is exactly what I needed before Sunday. So, because just to echo Dan's thoughts there, he said about at halftime, if you thought we'll just bring a goal back to sort of chip away that goal difference, I was exactly in the same mentality. So then when we got two back, I'm like, okay, there's nothing's affected the goal difference. It's not got better, but it's not gone worse. And now if you isolate even further, we are going to the minutiae now of just saying that only the second 45 minutes against West Ham existed, and that is the momentum that we take in Sunday's game, then I'll absolutely take that. And I'm hoping, like you say, the positivity that kind of brings does ooze into Sunday, and there seems to be loads of smiles in training from the pictures that have been released this week from the club and things. They're obviously only ever going to show those pictures, but I think if we cling to that momentum, and you've absolutely turned my view around there just by saying, let's just pretend we played 45 minutes against West Ham. And to be fair, the whole game wasn't bad. It was those two moments in isolation in the first half that really knocked the stuffing out of us, really, when we were trying to do things at the other end of the pitch. But yeah, I'm certainly taking that second 45-minute performance. And if we do that on Sunday, we should have enough.
Well, it's my job here, Dan, to kind of steer this ship kind of back and forwards down this wave of positivity and negativity. So why was the defending so... I mean, the word I want to use is kamikaze at times, because like there were moments in, like, even in that second half, Laporte and Edison with that kind of back pass that didn't really go... You know, he didn't put it out of play, but Edison was steaming off his line. Then Zinchenko decides to pop it back into the danger zone. Fernandinho with the short back pass. There was moments in the second half as well.
I mean, they're playing like a defence who are missing three key members of the personnel, aren't they, really? I think that's the problem. I think, you know, the two goals that they conceded had Laporte and or Diaz been alongside... had Diaz or Stones been alongside Laporte in defence, they probably don't happen. The positioning is probably a little bit better there. You know, they hold the line a little bit better. If Walker's at right back, he probably gets back to snuff that out. You know, Fernandinho, I love him to bits. He's been a fantastic player for us over the years, but I just don't think he's ever been a centre-back, and he can kind of fill in there a little bit. But, you know, even against Wolves and against Newcastle, there were some pretty dodgy moments involving him. The goal at Wolves, I thought, was his fault. So I think it's just a case of them just kind of making do with what they've got at the moment, and it's a problem that they were able to rescue themselves from. And yeah, there were some dodgy moments in the second half as well that they got away with. And hopefully, I mean, there's a report today, isn't there, that Stones and Walker are back in training. So hopefully at least one of them will be fit enough to play some part in the game on Sunday, and we'll start to look back to our old selves. Because I don't think it's an issue tactically or anything like that. I think, you know, we play a high line all the time, and it's just been exposed by the fact that we've got a 37-year-old midfielder filling in there at the moment.
Yeah, Adam, that's the thing, isn't it? You can't, like, as much as like the criticism all season have been that maybe City's squad has been too small to fight on all four fronts, the one place where they have got strength in depth is in the defence. You can't legislate for the fact that, what, four of them are injured at the same time?
Yeah, it's hard luck, and, you know, you don't want to bemoan these type of injuries as reasons why you're not doing so well, but it is a key factor. And I think there was a part where Fernandinho had to settle in and do a covering job in centre back, and he was poor then. That was 2 or 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. So add 2 or 3 more years into those legs, and he's still being asked to do a job that it's not very natural to him. He's a great defensive midfielder, but when he's defending with 40 yards behind him, you've not got a chance in a foot race. He's going to lose every time in this twilight of his career. And I feel it's not his fault that he's being asked to do that job. And the fact that we've had so much bad luck with these injuries in that key department, it's just been exasperated by the fact that the person we're asking to go into that position is an ageing defensive midfielder. And I just hope it doesn't tarnish his legacy with the fans. It shouldn't do. It's just a fact that it's bad luck of injuries in that department, and we're asking the caretaker to go and do the job for us. It's just... It's sad, really, because he deserves better than that. But we're almost flogging him at the moment just to get through these games.
Yeah, Dan, I did see a little bit of criticism, kind of during and after the game, headed towards Edison. What do you make of it all? Could he have been a bit better for? I mean, I'm not really blaming him for the first goal. I thought he came out and, you know, he made it fairly difficult. But could he have done better with the second one?
I think so. Yeah, because he tried to save it with his feet, didn't he? And I'm like, I don't know why he did that. Was he sort of thrown off balance? Did he think Bowen was going to put the other side of the goal or something, and he couldn't adjust in time and try to save it with his feet? I don't understand.
Might have been unsighted. He came through Fernandinho's legs.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that was annoying, actually, because Fernandinho got back into a good position and it still went through his legs. But I mean, again, Edison, I love him, but and he's fantastic for us, and we wouldn't be the same team without him with the way that he can pass the ball out and his calmness under pressure. But you do sometimes wonder where the saves are with him. You know, he doesn't come to our rescue an awful lot. You know, I can think of the Atletico Madrid game when he saved that one from Correa at the end, but it's pretty rare that you go, oh, wow, what a fantastic save Edison made today. He really, really pulls out the shit there. And you would like to see that a little bit more from him, but then, you know, you're sacrificing so much if you're bringing in a good shot stopper, aren't you? So it's a difficult balancing act. And I wonder if Edison's at the point in his career where can you even coach a goalkeeper to save shots better at that point, really? I don't know. Like,
and anyone who's ever coached me will tell you it's impossible. It is a delicate balancing act though, Adam. And as much as you might question Edison's shot stopping, if they win the league this year, it will be his fourth title in five years at City. So
he's on for the Golden Glove again as well.
Yeah.
I just wonder how much of it is like the fact that he's out of practice because he's faced with so little shots. So the ratio of shots to saves is lower because he probably only faces three or four shots a game. Where if he was peppered with 20 shots a game and conceding one or two, then you'd say, but he saved 18. So I think, and the points we'll get from him starting the attacks from the back and playing out through the back and how we split the two forwards or split their wide players and play around them, will over the season, you'd hope, gain us more points than it costs. But I think, and it's an age-old cliche with the goalkeeper, you're the last line of defence. If it goes past you, it's obvious that it's you that's made the mistake, if that's the case. There's no hiding place for Edison. And I think it's easy for him to be shot at. I do think his shot stopping leaves a bit to be desired, but I'm blaming that. I'm playing the numbers game for him, and I'm saying it's just because he only faces two or three shots a game. And I know your big goalkeepers will save those when it matters. But I just think, and I think the Golden Glove award is more down to the defensive partnerships we've had in front of him this season as well, and not just down to Edison. So yeah, he's not doing well to answer the questions that are being raised, shall I put it like that? Try and be quite nice to him.
Yeah. Remember when people used to say that Petr Cech was worth 15 points a season? I wonder how many Edison's worth. It's hard to quantify, isn't it, I guess?
Yeah, and I think
impossible to quantify, but yeah.
And I think his would be worth more in the other end of the pitch, as bizarre as it sounds. Like you say, like you'd lose so much if you forfeited him from the team. But I'd love to have some kind of mathematical equation. I'm probably the right person for it. So
I was going
to
say, step man over it.
Yeah, you've sent me my homework now. You know, how many attacks was he in the beginning of that ended in good chances or goals? And how many has he been directly affected by? Stay tuned to maybe Monday night's live show where we might have the answer to that one.
Yeah, we'll get Adam on the case for that one. Dan, I want to talk about Mahrez because after the game, there was a lot of people talking with 2020 hindsight that Mahrez shouldn't have taken that penalty kick. I cannot understand anybody suggesting that somebody else on that pitch would have been a better fit for that penalty kick, because Mahrez is the taker and he's been pretty good for City.
Yeah, it's absolute bollocks, I'm afraid, that people are saying that. You know, when the referee points the penalty spot, there's nobody else on that pitch who should be taking the penalty. He has been the most reliable taker for us over the past couple of years. And, you know, people are looking at the one that he missed against Liverpool a couple of years ago and this one now and saying, oh, he's a bit of a choker in the big moments. He's not got the mentality for it. And it's like, what are you talking about? You know, if it wasn't a great penalty from him against West Ham, let's be honest, but if the goalkeeper dives the wrong way there and it goes in, nobody's talking about this, are they? Everyone's talking about a win and another penalty score by Mahrez.
They're talking about how he's been cool under pressure. That's
yeah,
what
exactly.
About.
Yeah, yeah. You can't reverse engineer your feelings based on what happens. You have to kind of stick to your guns on these things. And Mahrez has been very reliable from the spot, more so than probably a lot of players in the team. You know, we went for a period where we had De Bruyne taking the penalties and then he missed a few and we switched it up. And, you know, I think Guardiola would say of the outfield players that we've got that Mahrez is the best penalty taker and will remain the penalty taker. But, you know, maybe we are one step closer to Edison taking a penalty after this. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing, Adam. He scored. I mean, people were talking about, as Dan said, that Mahrez chokes under pressure. But he scored, you know, after a very long wait against Dortmund when they were losing in that away leg. He scored at Arsenal on New Year's Day. He scored again against Spurs to draw the game earlier in the season. And then City went and lost it afterwards, but like these are big pressure moments, that all huge moments that he's scored in, so it's certainly not a pressure thing, is it?
No, so I think he's guilty of being weighed down by City's recent penalty performance as a whole over the last three or four seasons. So that's the only thing he's guilty of. Absolutely, he's the right person to take the penalty at that time in that match as of players on that pitch. It would have been a close one. The only one I can see close to him was De Bruyne, who wasn't in a particularly good moment, as Pep would say, in that game either. So absolutely the right person. I think the only thing that's affecting him is the fact that City have missed penalties. The fact that you can reel some misses off the top of your head without even thinking. De Bruyne against Liverpool, Gundogan against Liverpool. Perhaps it's just penalties against Liverpool, actually, where we choke and we're fine everywhere else. So I think that's just fresh in any City fans' mind. So I think whoever stepped up on Sunday, there would have been doubt in City fans' minds whether we were going to score or not because of recency bias. And I think that's all it boils down to. Mahrez is a big game player. He's done it in the final minutes of the African Cup of Nations. He's done it in the final moments of the Champions League for us. He's done it to equalise against Spurs, like you say. As easy as it is to reel off City misses, it's easy to reel off some Mahrez penalties that he slotted away as well. So I think it's just a collective negativity around City and penalties, not necessarily Mahrez on penalties.
I think people are looking at that missed chance against Liverpool the other week as well and saying that's a big moment that he kind of crumbled in. But it's like, I mean, that wasn't great either. But also, if he just takes a bit off that chip and it goes in, everyone's saying what an amazing goal, aren't they? Sometimes I think people's criticism is, why didn't you put the ball in the net? And it's like, well, I tried. It just didn't go in. Like, that's football, isn't it? Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, yeah. Final question for the first part of the show. Adam, if there's a penalty given and the score's a level on Sunday, who takes it?
It has to be Mahrez if he's on the pitch. I've got no doubt in my mind that he wouldn't bury it after the weekend. It's almost written in the stars.
Dan?
Ederson.
See, I'd be more petrified there. So.
It's not happening. Life can be overwhelming and many people are burned out without even knowing it. Symptoms can include a lack of motivation, feeling helpless or trapped, detachment, fatigue and more. And sometimes doing this show alongside my normal working week can leave me feeling burnt out, stressed and tired. It's so easy to get to the end of the week and sometimes realise that I've had just no time off, and it can leave me feeling both exhausted and helpless sometimes. In fact, one of the best things I did this season was taking a short break and letting Dan Burke take control of everything for a week. We associate burnout with work like that, but it's not the only cause. Any of our roles in life can lead us to feel burned out, and BetterHelp Online Therapy wants to remind you to prioritise yourself. Talking with someone can help you figure out what's causing stress in your life. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Blue Moon podcast listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/blue. That's BetterHelp.com/blue. Right. Well, the season's coming to a close with the final match against Aston Villa on Sunday. Ahead of that, I sat down with Casey and Kieran Murray to talk through some of the best bits of the last 10 months or so that won't make the end of season montages. We all know the best games, the best goals and all that sort of stuff, so we're focusing mainly on the things that made us laugh. We started by talking about dogs.
Man's best friend, and it turns out Man City's best friend.
I thought you were going to say backing up the wrong tree when you said where you always are with dogs.
Oh God, we're starting. Yes, Phil Foden's dog is called Carabao, presumably after his success in the Carabao Cup competition. And then we found out that this dog was called Carabao, and then we got knocked out of the Carabao. And Liverpool are now the owners of the Carabao Cup. So it's not going that well. It wasn't a good omen. I believe Phil Foden missed the penalty that sent us out of the competition as well. So
I forgot about that.
Yeah, I think his dog's probably strung up now.
Yeah, it was a real dog day afternoon.
Oh, Casey, stop it. Do you remember the story of Bernardo Silva jumping into the lake to save his dog, though, Casey?
Yeah, I do, yeah. That just seemed mental. Isn't that how we found out that his dog was called John as well?
I don't know.
Did it not come... Like, in my head, both of those two are mixed up, but...
Yeah, same.
Like Bernardo Silva, like, he's so small as well. You'd just be worried about him, to, like, the dog taking him down with him as well, wouldn't you? but yeah, just an absolutely mad story.
Yeah, it was. The story was, Kieran, that the dog can't swim. And saw the reeds on the lake and thought it was grass and jumped on it. And so just went straight through the reeds and into the water. And Bernardo was just like, I need to get this dog out. And so he jumped in after it.
St. Bernard.
Oh, what,
and you're telling me to pack it in? Telling me to pack it in with shite like that?
Mine was much more sophisticated than any of yours are.
It took me a second for the penny to drop there.
That's because it's a thinker, yeah. Casey's are all the lowest common denominator.
Yeah, your St. Bernard joke was a barrel of laughs.
Oh, God, it started. It started. What have we let ourselves in for?
I don't get that one at all.
We'll explain it to you after. let's talk about daft things that have been said in interviews this season as well. I think the iconic one. In fact, I'm going to play the selection of this interview from Cole Palmer after the Swindon game with ITV. This is what was said.
What do you make of your first FA Cup goal? Not one in the Premier League yet, but your first FA Cup goal for City.
I know, yeah, delighted. Prem soon come, but just got to take game by game, day by day, and hopefully work my way up.
And how has the manager been in touch in the last few days and during the game and tonight? How's he been in touch?
I think he's been in touch with Rodolfo, and Rodolfo's passed it on to us, and yeah, delighted for him.
And what do you think he'll have made of your performance from a distance?
Who?
Pep.
Hopefully he enjoyed it.
It's I promise you, like, everyone latched onto the Prem 2 cover bit. Yeah. Okay, see, that who bit's the best bit.
Who? I would love to hear Kieran do an impression of Prem soon come, though.
Go on then, Kieran.
Who? You know, Prem soon come.
What the fuck was that?
That was put me on a spot and do an impression.
That was just in your accent.
Prem soon come.
Casey, he both sounds and looks like he's from Withenshaw, doesn't he? He's got that look of somebody. It's like, I am from Withenshaw. That's what he looks like.
Yeah, yeah, and that's meant in a very complimentary way. Just looks like he's just completely comfortable in his own skin.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Kieran, the who is the best bit, isn't it? Like, everyone latched onto Prem Sukum, but who is the best bit of that interview?
Yeah, no, absolutely. But like, the interviewer makes it pretty clear, because obviously the Rodolfo bit, like, it causes him a bit of confusion because he doesn't know whether he's talking about Rodolfo or Pep. But then the interviewer says, do you think he'll be impressed watching you from a distance? So when he goes, oh, clearly meant Guardiola, like. Prem soon come. Just like, as a non-native Mancunian, that's not a Mancunian turn of phrase, is it? Like, something soon come. Has it just been like a one-off?
It's more that we're just old, mate. Like, time's just moved on. Yeah, us three are mid-30s now. This is how the young lads speak now, I reckon.
Right, okay.
What, just by missing words out? No, surely not.
Of course. Language evolves, David. You know this.
He's just flexing, I suppose, is he?
Yeah,
I don't know what that means, Kieran.
check you out as an English teacher as well, wanting to know the ins and outs of the cat's arse.
let's move on to later in the season, because it was all going on with Everton as well. KC, there was first off, there was the Rodri handball that everyone just seemed to kind of memory hole that happened. It was a case of maybe you did handball it, but you know, we'll never know.
No, to be fair, when you know a few Evertonians, and I know Kieran knows more than me, nobody's memory hole that, like, it's brought up every day. Like, it's like you know, the you know, I know quite a lot of our fans can be like, oh, the world's out to get us, but yeah, Evertonians are a different breed.
Oh, it's Evertonians just, will remember things from 1972 that they'll bring up over and over again, even now, that it's still bitter about. Before they're even born, they'll still be going on about it. Like,
what could Rodri have done more, Kieran, to have got away with a handball there? Could he have caught it and got away with that? It was such extreme handball.
Yeah, and no wonder they wanted an apology for it. But didn't Rodri kind of like rewrite the rule book last year against Villa with some like mad offside decision, and the Villa fans lost their mind? So he's got this kind of like peculiar habit of being able to like absolutely send a fan base like wild over sort of some little misdemeanor or rule break or rule change that seems to apply to him and only him. And then it sets everybody fucking skew whiff in their head. What was the final decision came down to something, or the final like bullshitty decision they gave was something about him.
There was his sleeve or something.
Yeah,
there was no conclusive evidence that the ball hit only the part of the arm that it's not allowed to hit. It definitely hit it, but there was no conclusive evidence that it didn't also hit the top of the arm, which it is allowed to hit. And so the VAR could not overturn the decision that was on the pitch. And everybody in that away end just went, well, thank fuck for that.
Yeah. I know. The conclusive evidence being that all our eyes saw it. It couldn't have been more of a handball.
What was the pineapple as well? You told me about the pineapple at Everton. Was this just an inflatable?
Yes, but like John Hay and Alex and Nico and that went to I think Smithy's, you know, the fancy dress shop where you can get all kind of like mad inflatables and props and stuff, and they wanted to get inflatable bananas for the away end, but I think they only had one inflatable banana left. So they were like, what else have you got? And they were like, we've got a pineapple. So they just bought it and took it with them the match. But there's brilliant photos of Sam Lee with
Sam
it before
Lee,
the match.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
And then when, was it Foden scored later on in that game?
Yeah, you can just see a mad pineapple in the way.
See a pineapple going all around. Like, we should really be having pineapples for the South Stand at the weekend against Villa because it should be a staple of City fandom now. It was absolutely amazing. You could just see that pineapple waving all over the place amongst the limbs in the away end of Goodison. It was great.
Yeah. Now, we can't get this far into the alternative highlights of the season without talking about this being the season where Guardiola has... he's come out of his shell a little bit in press conferences, but he has gone full Burt. Here is a bit of a press conference megamix of some of the things that he's said recently.
The last stage of the season, fighting for the titles. And that means we are a big club. There's a lot of money, I know that. But not just that.
Hi, Pep. I think you just used the words overthink.
I overthink a lot.
And is that fair?
Absolutely. Tonight I take an inspiration and I'm going to do an incredible tactics tomorrow. So we play with 12 tomorrow.
Bernardo was in before and he said that you had a plan to win tomorrow.
Well, it surprised me a lot because Bernardo said we have a plan, but still we didn't speak about the plan.
Fernandinho has said that he's leaving at the end of the season.
Oh, I didn't know it.
Is that news to you?
Simon, you gave me the news.
Sorry about that.
I didn't know it.
Everyone in this country support Liverpool, the media and everyone. So Liverpool has an incredible history behind in Europe competitions and not in Premier Leagues because won one in 30 years, but it's not a problem at all.
The absolute saltiness of that, not in Premier Leagues, KC.
Yeah, it's the way that he sort of says like that last one, saying you all support Liverpool, come on. It's like with a look that would seduce your mother. It's just like he just says it like so sultry, like come on, like just absolutely ridiculous the way he says it. But yeah, he has been on good form with that sort of stuff this year, and I think hopefully that's a good sign that shows that he's, you know, more relaxed and comfortable and, you know, taking the piss out of not just the press but himself as well.
Yeah.
Considering how stressful this title race is.
Yeah. Kieran, what's your favourite one?
That 12 players was just a masterclass in comic timing and delivery. Just I always like deprecating humour where you can kind of send yourself up and have a little bit of a dig and laugh at your own self. So him being aware, because he was aware of the Fraudiola stuff, wasn't he, in the past?
Yeah.
And now being aware of the kind of idea that he's an overthinker and then sending himself up well enough to say that we play with 12 players, so he's going to really throw tactics out the window. Yeah, I really like that. I enjoyed that one.
Yeah. Let's talk Grealish, because he's had a hell of a first season, largely centred around the Atletico Madrid and Leeds games, because not only was he was pelted with paper throughout the entirety of the Leeds game, he had his hair pulled against Atletico Madrid. And then of all the things that he could have done to win City fans over, I think, KC, calling Stefan Savic a four-letter word beginning with C was probably his finest moment, was it?
Yeah, like I absolutely love that as well. Like the best bit about it as well is obviously there's no sound on the clip, but you can hear his accent in it. Yeah,
go on, like, then do an impression of it.
You're a shoe.
No, it's more like, hey,
where is Grealish from? Like that?
David, if we say, will you be able to beep us out? Because I've always wanted to be beeped out.
I can beep it out if you want. Yeah,
beep out the whole of his impressions. Jesus, what?
I could do a really good Jack Grealish impression.
No, you can't. Don't do it.
Yes, I can. Listen. Hello, fancy seeing you here.
Who was that?
Grealish, Bromy.
Absolutely not. Moving on to Newcastle away, because Kieran, you told me this is where, like, right, okay, what is this? Le Porn Hub. What is this?
Le Porn Hub. I can't remember. I can't remember exactly the reply, but in the midst of, like, I don't know, Laporte's tweeted out saying something like, you know, great performance by all the lads today or something, and then some random on Twitter has replied to him going, great performance, Le Porn Hub. And then he's just replied to this going, like, what did you call me? So, like, he's actually made it a thing by responding to it. Otherwise, it just would have got lost in the replies, you know. And now people have started affectionately calling him Le Porn Hub, which is a fucking unreal nickname, isn't it? Reminds me of that T-shirt you can get that's got the Porn Hub logo, but it's a City T-shirt and it says Oil Club.
Oh yeah, I've seen it in the Smithfield before a game one time or something.
Yeah, I think you pointed it out to me. I think that ginger wig sells and they're really good. So Le Porn Hub is just brilliant. I don't know who came up with it or why or how it links to him in the slightest, but yeah, just dead funny, Le Porn Hub.
Embrace it. The other thing I remember from Newcastle away, KC, was Cancelo just chopping down their striker for a penalty and then it just not being given. Like that one just being forgotten again, like the Rodri one.
That was just a mental decision. It was Edison and Cancelo together, both inspired to just go, yeah. It was Edison.
Not Cancelo.
So Cancelo had control of the ball, but like Edison just did an Edison and just came out and just thought, I'm just going to take this guy out by the knees for absolutely no reason when Cancelo's fully in control of the ball. But that was another decision we got away with.
Yeah. Let's talk United because it's...
It's
never not funny, is it, to see the difference between where City are now and where United are now compared to what they used to be. The transfers, I mean, the thing for me, Kieran, is the fact that we are 2009 that the Welcome to Manchester poster went up? We're nearly 15 years on from that. And still, nobody outside of Manchester City gets it.
I know. You did a lovely feature on it, didn't you, last year? I remember it was really good when Sancho arrived and they tried to do the Welcome to Manchester. I constantly sort of have to explain it to my United supporting mates from home as well. It flies right over their head. The idea being that Manchester United are not located in Manchester City.
It's as simple as that, and none of them get it.
Yeah. So where is it actually located? Trafford, which is a suburb of Manchester, is that right?
Yeah, it's in the metropolitan borough of Trafford, which is in Greater Manchester. But in terms of the boroughs, the borough of Manchester is outside of that.
Yeah. So the Carlos Tevez Welcome to Manchester joke is because Manchester United isn't in Manchester, and they use it every time. Like, United fans just do not get it. It's mad.
Yeah. I'm absolutely stunned that them lot have got no sense of humour and no intelligence.
Yeah, it's hard to fathom, isn't it? Yeah. Can they see the funny side of being sixth again this season? I don't know. I can't.
KC as well, there was the whole Ronaldo thing at the start of the season, how what the player that they assumed was going to come back and win the title for them and was going to make them challengers again. They'd stolen him from under City's nose, and look at how the season's gone.
The amount of conversations I had in pubs with people those first couple of weeks, where it was literally just like United blokes just going, "Oh, we're going to win the league. We're going to win the league easy." Like, you're not worried. Like, "Oh yeah, we've got him from underneath you," and you're just like, "You've got absolutely no midfield. What the hell do you think you're going to do this season? Like, A, you're crap and you've got no midfield. Why do you think that you're going to be able to win the league? But instead it was just easy to just like sort of nod along and just like sort of smugly go, yeah, yeah, probably, yeah, we'll you know, we'll see at the end of the season.
The birdie buffer is 32 points. We are on 90 and they're on 58. I mean, how the mighty have fallen? 10 years ago was the QPR game where we beat them on goal difference and now we're beating them by 32 points. It's mental.
Is 71 is the difference in goal difference at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're 72, and our goal difference is plus 72, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely insane.
Let's run through some final alternative highlights very quickly to finish. The third kit's been a disaster, Kieran.
I've grown tiny bit.
Yeah. Do you know why you have? Because you're a gobshite. It's awful.
Stockholm syndrome, that's what it is.
Aesthetically, I think it's horrific still, but I kind of, when I see them lining out in it, I'm not thinking, oh God, this is a disaster and I'm going to be sick looking at it the way it was at the start of the season. It used to anger me. It used to aggravate me that much.
Kits don't generally anger. It just looks like a pair of pyjamas, doesn't it?
Yeah. It was insulting that they released it. Like, City fans don't even call City Man City. So it was just weird to see it like emblazoned across like that. It was just an insult to fans to have that kit. But I think we played all right in it, apart from obviously getting dumped out of the Champions League in it.
And the Carabao.
And what shit? Oh, right, okay. Maybe not. I seem to recall a few decent performances in the league, but now I'm thinking we just drew with West Ham in it. So, yeah, maybe let's put it in room 101 and never think of it again, yeah.
Yeah. KC, you saw Ben Mee at the Etihad?
I did see Ben Mee at the Etihad, and it was the day of the derby. But this absolute prick here, because he's like, no way is that Ben Mee, because he thought he was too short. It was fucking definitely Ben Mee. Ben Mee, because I know you're a Bert, if you're listening, say that you're in the fucking Tunnel Club or whatever, wherever you were at the derby. Because this gobshite then sees the greasiest looking man you've ever seen and goes, oh, is that Jack Grealish?
And then a bald man walked by and we were like, oh, there's Pep. So we found lookalikes for everybody on the concourse then after KC thought some random blonde fellow was Ben Mee.
It was Ben Mee, mate. He had a lanyard. It was Ben Mee.
Wait, had a lanyard. That's it, is it? He had a lanyard.
And he had a lanyard and it was Ben Mee.
Literally, he just had a lanyard and he was walking about in a bit that we weren't familiar with. And he's going, oh, look. That's me in the corner.
Scott Carlson kept a Champions League clean sheet, Kieran.
That's mad. I think he's our only current Champions League winner in the squad, isn't he? So it was great to see him back in the competition. He seems to be an absolute hero, doesn't he? The boys seem to really love him. And he was trying to like organise a straightener with some of the Atletico Madrid players in the car park after, wasn't he?
That finger twirl was absolute. That's just, you know, that's someone who's been in the vault in a pub that's just like, yeah, I've been here before, out the back, lad.
Yeah, he's a bit of a legend, isn't he? They seem to adore him. And then there was a big, like, there was a thing of him kind of coming back into the dressing room after or something, wasn't there? And everybody, like, whooping and cheering and jumping around for him. So, yeah, that was a really nice little highlight of the season, like.
Yeah, and finally, Kieran, you have to, I've forgotten what this one was, you have to explain to me, what was not a rivalry?
It's just mad journalists seem to be thinking that Liverpool and City isn't really a rivalry because we don't hate each other as much as the days of like Vieira and Keane in the tunnel or all these Fergie rivalries. So
it's just mansplaining, isn't it, basically?
Yeah, it is basically, yeah. And longing for the 90s and noughties under United sort of heyday. Because no journalist can look at this rivalry between City and Liverpool in footballing terms and think that it is a rivalry because there's no needling and no hatred. But then Pep kind of started needling Liverpool a little bit, so maybe he's ramping up the rivalry. Haven't seen this. I don't know. Yeah,
maybe he read it all. Maybe he did.
Yeah.
So, KC, what's your alternative highlight of the season? We've talked through a load there. What is it that makes the cut for you?
Out of all them, probably this bollocks taking the piss out of me with Ben Mee.
Kieran, same question.
Definitely Grealish calling Savage a
Please give us your backing. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
That was our alternative moments of the season. Don't forget that next week's podcast is being recorded in front of a live audience. If you're in Manchester on Monday the 23rd of May, tickets are still available. Just take a look at our Twitter feed at Blue Moon Podcast for details. It's at Idle Hands Coffee on Dale Street in the Northern Quarter. It's due to kick off at about 8:30 p.m. But if there happens to be a parade, and we're not counting any chickens yet, don't start blaming us if there isn't a parade for anything here. But just in case there is, we will wait until it's finished. So you can get yourself over to that and then come over to the show. Adam here has also promised to buy all the drinks for the night, haven't you, Adam?
Yeah, me and my big mouth losing a bet.
Yeah, I can't even remember what it was for. I just remember that you're going to buy us all drinks, yeah.
I said that we wouldn't score more than one goal against Burnley away, and we beat them 2-0, I think.
Oh, yeah, so. It was 2-0 inside 20 minutes or so, wasn't it?
Yeah, there we exactly.
Go. Yeah. Right. Well, now it's time to preview whether or not there will be a parade. It's Aston Villa at home. City need the win to guarantee the title. Let's welcome Frankie Maguire from All Villa No Filler. Hi, Frankie.
Hi, how you doing?
Not too bad, thanks. Bit nervous, but we'll kind of part that for now. How's it going with Villa at the minute? You're safely in mid-table. It's all kind of about final position in the table now, isn't it?
Yeah, we're sort of firmly ensconced in the much-coveted race for 12th place. which I guess counts as progression for us, considering, you know, we were in the Championship not that long ago. Our form's been very, very streaky. Seem to go on 3-game winning streaks where we'll batter aside like Southampton 4-0. And then proceed to go on a 4-game losing streak where we proceed to be destroyed by Tottenham 4-0. So very hard to predict Villa. Tend to do okay against the teams I think you expect us to do okay against. But then when it comes up to the top eight, we haven't got a win under Steven Gerrard yet. So I'm not convinced this Sunday might be the day that winning streak starts.
I was going to say, if you could hold it off for just at least one more attempt at any of the top eight, that would be nice. Dan, I guess what you don't want to hear is that City's opposition for the final day of the season when they need to win to secure the title is that the opposition are very unpredictable.
Yeah, it's far from ideal that. I'd love to be able to say exactly what kind of Aston Villa is going to turn up and that we'll just kind of steamroller them. And yeah, I've been looking at this one ever since we signed Jack Grealish, actually, and thinking that there was a bit of a narrative there for the last game of the season, and particularly since Villa got Steven Gerrard as their manager, that's another one to add to the narrative bucket, isn't it? You know, Coutinho as well, who knows whether he might pop up and do something against to help his old team out. So yeah, there's a million scenarios that I've played over and over in my head already this week, and I'm sure it's only going to get worse as we get closer to kickoff on Sunday. And I just hope the scenario where City ease to victory is the one that ends up being the truth.
Yeah, that plays out. Adam, what sort of game are you expecting? Can you see... I mean, the two I'm thinking of are the end of the 18-19 season where City played that really, really tense game against Leicester in the second-to-last game of the season, or where they played the game at Brighton where actually they were pretty comfortable after an hour or so.
Yeah, scarily, I'm predicting another Leicester game. KG up until second part of the second half and then hopefully a moment of magic... does it for us. I can't see us being not nervous enough to go and just play our game. I think nerves will take over. I think there'll be nerves from the stands. I think that'll admit to the players on the pitch. I hope I'm wrong, but I'm generally kind of a negative persuasion when it comes to these type of business end crunch meetings. So I'm predicting similar to that.
Yeah. Frankie, what are the Villa fans feeling towards this? I mean, obviously we're recording before your game with Burnley, so it's kind of difficult to kind of assess where you are at the minute in terms of squad and what shape the squad will be in. But what are the feelings from the Villa end?
I think there's a real sense from Villa fans that we really do want to get something out of this. So I think there probably is a bit of added spice with the whole sort of Grealish backdrop. And I don't know, having some, you know, impact upon the top of the table. I think it is something you probably do want as a club. I think it'd be good for us going forward. But, you know, to reassure City fans, it might be a bit nervous. Villa have lost 13 out of 15 to City. Even when City weren't that great, Sylvain Distan was still running the length of the pitch to score against us. But I think, you know, if you look at our recent history against you, the two most recent games we've played against at the Etihad, you had Nil-nil at half-time, I think both of them were. And last season, we had the Bernardo Silva goal, you know, coming back from an offside position and taking it off Mings. And they were two quite cagey games, really. So, yeah, I could see it being quite a cagey one. And I think Gerrard will have the team definitely up for it. And I could suggest a couple of ways Villa might threaten you, if you want to know about that sort of stuff. I'm not sure, but
I'd like to know. I'm one of those people that wants as much information about the impending terror that's going to happen. So feel free, you know, tell us how do you expect Villa to play?
Steven Gerrard will be very angry at me for giving the game away. No, basically, I think something to look out for is if Fernandinho's playing. I'm not sure what the deal is there with your injuries at centre-back, but if he is playing, long balls over the top towards Ollie Watkins might actually cause a few problems for City's defence. And Luca Digne has started to prove a very effective attacking fullback for Villa. And I know Kyle Walker is currently struggling with an injury after the Real Madrid game. So those two players might be a way that Villa can hurt City, but overall it's going to be a bit of a siege, I think. And I'm not convinced Marvellous Nakamba, destroyer of a centre midfielder, will be the man to deal with Kevin De Bruyne. But, you know, stranger things have happened.
Yeah, Adam, in terms of City's lineup, I mean, Dan mentioned it before about, you know, that we saw, you know, Stones and Walker back in training, might be available, might not be available. How much of a risk do you take in terms of this game? Because, you know, Ake's been, you know, on the fringes of being fit again. He's been on the bench a couple of times, but hasn't come on. You know, Fernandinho, Zinchenko didn't have the best games at West Ham. Like, how do you balance it all?
I think you take all the risks now. It's a cup final now. It's a straight shootout. We need to win the game to win the league. You take all the risks. There's no game next week. It's not as if we've got a Champions League final to come. I don't think Pep gives two hoots about the Europa Nations competition that Walker and Stones might have their eye on. I think you bring them in and play them as much as they can give you. I think Walker was the difference when he came in against Madrid, and you saw the drop in level when he went off as well. So I'd throw them both in, even if they could only walk for 5 minutes on the pitch. I'd rather that. Literally, you need to do everything in your power to win this football match. Yeah. And if that means playing some subpar fitness performing players, you do it.
Yeah, Dan, I wondered if the reason we haven't seen Ake is that Guardiola might be looking at this game and be able to get 90 minutes out of him, you know, if he'd rested him for the last two.
I hope so, yeah. I really hope that he's available, that he can play alongside Laporte. I know there's a bit of reservations about, or some talk that Guardiola doesn't like left-footed centre-backs playing together. I don't know whether that's actually true or not. It does seem a bit weird to think about two left-footed centre-backs playing with each other, but I don't really know why. But yeah,
so two right-footers play together all the time.
Exactly,
I mean,
Stones and Diaz
were great together.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So, I mean, if Ake's fit and Stones isn't fit, then I would definitely like to see Ake starting alongside Laporte. If Ake isn't fit, I would be almost tempted to put Fernandinho in midfield and put Rodri at centre-back. Just maybe he might be a little bit better at dealing with you know, Watkins and Ings and a bit of pacing behind. I don't know, really, but I don't want to see Fernandinho at centre-back again after the West Ham game, really. So that would be my hope.
Yeah. Frankie, in terms of Aston Villa going forward, who have been the standout players? You mentioned Watkins before and Digne and his service. Is there anybody else that could cause problems?
Well, we currently seem to be starting Coutinho a lot, kind of behind the two strikers, behind Ings and Watkins. Ings, in fairness, he hasn't scored a great deal this season, but he's got quite a high number of assists. But Coutinho, believe it or not, I actually think Buendia's a more effective player, particularly against a probably quite a physical midfield like City in the centre. So I think a player to look out for is, if Coutinho is not particularly effective this weekend and Buendia comes on in the last 20 minutes, every time Buendia's come on the pitch in the last kind of, since January, he's done something really impressive. He's, you know, laid on an absolute gilt-edged chance in every single, honestly, every appearance he's had. He's good at, you know, physically, he's quite a diminutive player, but he's physically good at sort of standing a player up, backing into a player, holding the ball up and just creating something. So he's probably a player that if he does come onto the pitch and it's a bit tight, City, I think, but it should probably stick quite close to him because he's something, somebody who will conjure something at some point.
Yeah. What's your away form been like this season?
It's largely better than home form, we're more effective, I think, away from home generally, and have been for quite a number of years, really. So, yeah, I mean, beat Burnley in our most recent away game 3-1, drew 0-0 away at Leicester, and also lost 2-1 to Wolves, which is quite frustrating. But they've always they've been, you know, quite tight games generally. We kind of set up quite well defensively away. And, you know, we also had a really good result up at Leeds not too long ago as well, winning 3-0. Obviously, that's a very different challenge to Man City. You know, and earlier this season, we got a 1-0 away win at Old Trafford.
Who doesn't win there these days?
That's the truth, isn't it? Villa winning at Old Trafford still feels like a big deal. But actually, when you take it into context, you're like, good God, it's the easiest place in the world to win nowadays. So I think away from home, we haven't been battered. So that's why I'm kind of veering on what I think the score might be this weekend as to whether we are quite effective defensively and hopefully don't fall apart.
Yeah, Dan, I mean, I know it's a massive cliche in football, but for this season, the first goal for City has been crucial because when City take the lead, they win the game. That's how it's been going this season. I can't explain how much I want City to score the opening goal inside the first 15 minutes. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've never wanted it more. Do you know what I mean?
The first 5 minutes will be better, if anything, wouldn't it? And that's what I'm hoping for, that we, you know, there's going to be a great atmosphere at the Etihad, that City come out fired up, that De Bruyne's, you know, really fired up like he was against Wolves the other week, and we start the game, you know, like a runaway train and get Villa under the cosh straight away, get an early goal, and then we can relax a little bit, then maybe get one or two more goals before half time and just chill out then, and everything's wonderful. But the longer we go without scoring that first goal, the more tense it's going to become. You know, if Villa go a goal up, it's going to be unbearable. And we've seen so many times, you know, we've said so many times over the years that, you know, you can get a sense of how City are going to play from the first 5 or 10 minutes. Usually can't. You can get a sense of how the game's going to go. So I just want the game to start now, and I want to know what that first 5 minutes is going to look like. And then I can start, you know, thinking about how the game's going to pan out. But yeah, an early goal would be amazing.
Yeah. Adam, how much of an eye will you be keeping on what's going on between Liverpool and Wolves?
Yeah, I think it's unavoidable. They have the ticker tape going around the stadium with the current live scores, and we won't be able to avoid it. I definitely know Liverpool are scoring before us on Sunday. That's definitely
you've seen
happening.
That happen, have you? Here,
oh yeah, definitely happening. The charity bet's coming home this weekend because yeah, that we don't score till late on Sunday to add to the drama. So that
you also
yeah,
said we won't score more than one against Burnley.
True,
Adam, so that's been...
true. I'm hoping that's also correct. So yeah, you won't be able to avoid the other scores, and such is technology nowadays that it'll be pinging off everyone's phone. Even if you try and ignore it on your own device, someone next to you will see it, and you'll hear mutters going round. As long as it's not false mutters like when Steve Lomas kept the ball in the corner thinking we only needed a draw
yeah,
and we needed to score to stay up. As long as it's correct information, then I'm happy for that to trickle through.
I was going to say, we've been here before. So I remember the 2-2 with Liverpool and we're holding the ball by the corner flag, but also that QPR game in 2012, there were rumours near me that Sunderland had equalised and that Dzeko's goal was enough, and I was like, it just clearly isn't true. Where's it come from? It's like it's not on. Dan, in terms of City's frontline selection for this game, what do you do? Because pretty much everybody's fit and available. They've been rotated in and out all season. I'm kind of interested whether he'll go with Jack Grealish.
Yeah, because I thought Grealish was our best player against West Ham. I thought he was really good and you know, barely wasted a ball and got on the score sheet. And I think he's been getting better and better as the weeks have progressed towards the end of this season. He was good against Newcastle the other week as well. But I don't know whether that means he's going to start this game. I don't know whether the Pep is, you know, thinking about what he's going to do against his old club, or, you know, he didn't bring Foden on and he didn't bring Sterling on against West Ham, which would maybe suggest that they're going to start. I don't know. You know, there's been a big gap in between the two games. So it wasn't a case of keeping people fresh, really, was it? Because you'd imagine everybody would be fresh. Really, I wouldn't mind any front three that you can pick from. You know, we've got Mahrez, who's an option as well. You've got Gabriel Jesus, who's been playing really well. So any of the six players basically in that front three would be decent enough, and he can always bring players off the bench as well. It's more midfield, I think, that might be the interesting point of what he goes for in terms of whether he goes for Gundogan and De Bruyne or Bernardo and De Bruyne.
Yeah. Frankie, if City were to go with Grealish, what sort of reaction would he get now?
I think it would most likely still be similar to what he got earlier in the season, a very mixed one. I'd say the away support might give him a little bit more dog's abuse, maybe slightly more vocal and passionate. But, you know, at Villa Park, it was quite mixed. It was a lot of people standing up and applauding, but obviously booing is a bit louder and it you know, it's easier to hear. So there was plenty of that as well. But I've always said with Grealish at Villa, I think time will be a healer there. And I think, you know, when he comes back in a couple of seasons, we'll just look back and remember all the great times he had with Villa and the fact that he is ultimately an Aston Villa fan and still, hopefully. So, yeah, I think if he appears on the pitch, it'll be interesting because, you know, I guess for City, Guardiola, maybe he thinks that Villa's defence will know him better, be better prepared for Grealish than, say, someone like Foden and Sterling. But at the same time, Grealish's form in recent weeks, I've watched quite a few of your games. And I thought Grealish has really started to look like he's getting up to speed with City now.
Yeah, he's looking settled, isn't he?
Yeah, there's definitely some positive signs. And I've always believed in him. I've always thought, you know, it'd be a bit similar to Mahrez, that it would take him time to get used to the Guardiola way. And he's such a brilliant talent that, you know, I always felt he could do it. And, you know, against Real Madrid, he was incredibly unlucky not to score those two chances. But that was the kind of penetrating run that I remember he'd do at Villa. And I haven't seen enough of at City. So hopefully he's confident enough now to start doing that. Well, hopefully not against Aston Villa, but next season for you anyway.
Do you reckon if he scored an Aguero-like goal in the last minute, he would celebrate or not?
It'd be the funniest apology goal of all time, wouldn't it? Like, you'd be like, oh, I guess I should apologise while there's a pitch invasion going on around you. I think, you know, you just got to give it him, haven't you? If he scores a goal like that, Aguero style, you know, how do you restrain yourself, really? But, you know, as I say, with Grealish and Villa, I think there's still a bit of angst among the support. There's a lot of, you know, hurt feelings, I guess, seeing such a special player go. But over time, I think it'll heal up, I think.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that Aguero goal in QPR in 2012 as well, Dan. The QPR players in 2012 said their team talk was pretty much done by City, thinking it was going to be simple. Frankie, I'm interested. Do you fancy the Villa players could be fired up by a lot of people on the outside thinking that this is just going to be a cut and dry City win?
I think so. And I thought Jurgen Klopp was quite smart the other day when he said that he doesn't expect Villa to do anything because we have to play on a Thursday night tonight against Burnley and then on the Sunday. And as a club, we're not used to that because we don't play in Europe, or haven't done for a while at least. And I think they're the kind of comments that it's quite a canny thing for Klopp to have done, to sort of fire up the players in some way and say, actually, we're going to prove you wrong. And I think there probably is a sort of sense of, you know, I can see it amongst the fan base as well, even just looking on Twitter and things, that people maybe have slightly written Villa off a little bit, or believe Villa aren't capable of taking on City. But I think there is a sense that we want to kind of go and prove, or want our players to go and prove a fair few people wrong.
Yeah. What you need to do now is just double bluff Klopp and just, you know, open up the middle of the pitch, play no goalkeeper, make it nice and easy. That sort of thing.
Yeah. I could imagine it.
Yeah. Now, look, I don't want to panic anybody, but we've got one game of the season left and we still need one more win on the charity bet for our best ever season. We've been this close now for about 9 weeks. And so we're getting to the stage now where if none of you get it right, I'm going to start going around to people's houses and asking for money. William Hill's given each of us a £10 correct score single. The winnings are going to the Man City fans' food bank support. Go and see them on Sunday. They'll be outside the Etihad under the bridge by Asda from about 1:30. Obviously, it's Villa at home. It's the final game of the season. Let's try and add some money to the kitty, shall we? Let's start with Adam. What's your score prediction for this one?
So yeah, nervy 1-0, 70-odd minute.
Nervy 1-0 is 8-1. We don't get the timing on it, so just 8-1 will do you. 80 quid if you're right. Frankie, what are you having?
Yeah, I'm never confident facing City. I think we'll put up a good fight and we might get an early goal, possibly through Watkins, but I think ultimately you'll probably have too much. And I'm going for a 3-1 Man City win.
3-1 is 11-1 and £110 if you're right, Dan.
Before I say this, let me tell you that I am terrified about Sunday. I'm not going into this, you know, cocky whatsoever, but my hunch tells me that we're going to win 4-1. So that's what I'm going to go for, 4-1.
Yeah, trusty gut feeling. It's in terms of score predictions, it's always wrong. So there's There's nothing to take from that. 16 to 1 if you're right, though. £160 into the kitty. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for more on gambling responsibly, have a look at begambleaware.org. Frankie Maguire from All Villa, No Filler. Normally, at this point, I wish everybody the best for the season. But honestly, this week, there is absolutely no way you are getting any nice feelings from me whatsoever. City just got to get the job done. So I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, well, hopefully Gerrard sticks up my 3-1 prediction on the wall and that inspires the Aston Villa players to go out and do all right.
Yeah, I hope not.
I would wish City luck this weekend, but obviously I can't. But good luck going forward, at least, anyway. It was nice to chat to you again.
Frankie Maguire from All Villa, No Filler. Now it's time to hear from Howard Hocking for the final time this season. He's looking at the reasons to be cheerful ahead of Sunday's game.
It's almost over, the longest of 9 months, like an elephant's pregnancy rather than a human's. I've not really thought that through. Every season nowadays is hard work, even when the team hits the heights, at least if you live a second life on the internet anyway. Anyway, there's been other stuff to talk about though this week, away from the matches. The new kit's out, and very nice it is too. News emerged also about the possible departure of Ilkay Gundogan. It's weird how the news that Gundogan is leaving, possibly, makes me slightly conflicted. My only feeling should be regret, as he has been one of City's greatest value ever buys, and his leadership, calm and nous on and off the pitch is a huge loss, should he go. In the same summer, Fernandinho also leaves. And yet I assume that his exit, should it happen, means someone is coming in, and there's always an air of excitement at the possibility of a new signing, especially in recent years when they tend to be rather good. I imagine the same squad being robotically brilliant for a decade, with no arrivals and no departures. Yeah, I'd enjoy it all, but there would be an air of staleness at not seeing anything new, not learning the ways of a new player, and possibly falling in love with them, as you have with so many before. Anyway, now it seems that his departure is not so clear, and his travel abroad was actually to get married. Strange timing, but hey, congratulations. So what does this mean for the squad going into next season? Well, Nah, I'm sorry, I can't do this anymore. What was I thinking? A nice 7-minute segment on transfer chat isn't distracting anyone from Sunday. It's pointless, absolutely pointless. There can be no distraction, we're just waiting now and suffering in the meantime. Oh well, at least I tried. So what can I do? Well, there's only one thing left to talk about. Try and be objective. Try and look at Sunday rationally, if that is possible. Try and be positive, again, if possible. This is me, after all. So here is a list of reasons why City will win on Sunday, perhaps comfortably. Let's start with the obvious. We're playing at home against an inferior side who are about 45 points behind us in the league, with a clear objective, and are the only team with something to play for. It really does mean more for City on Sunday. Then there's the Steven Gerrard narrative. It may surprise some to learn he isn't playing. I wish he was, he's 41. He may desperately want Liverpool to win the title, or he may be focused on his own team. But either way, what are you expecting him to do? Dress up as Braveheart and give such a rousing pre-match speech, his squad turn into a reincarnation of the Brazil 1970 team? I assume he wants his team to win every match, so I'm not sure his desire will be any different to normal. Coutinho too. If he has another level to take his game, then perhaps the key question is why wasn't he reaching those levels in previous matches? Forget Coutinho, who once played for Liverpool and thus must automatically be a fan for life and have a liver bird tattooed on his arse. Him and Gerrard narratives are irrelevant, an absolute goldmine for media content and nothing more, something for Liverpool fans to cling on to, as irrelevant as the fake stories about Villa getting £15 million for Grealish if City win the title. If City mess up on Sunday, it's because of other reasons, the main one being that they simply didn't play well enough to win the match. More relevant financially is the money earned per position in the table, and as Villa could go up 3 places by beating Burnley on Thursday evening, the more winnable of their 2 remaining games, is that not the game Gerrard should play his strongest side in? It could be worth almost £6 million in the coffers, though Palace above them have United at the weekend, so maybe that's wishful thinking on my part. Next is the big comfort going into the weekend. About 66 hours before Aston Villa kick off against City, they finish their previous match against Burnley, who are fighting for survival. Many eyes will keenly be looking at the lineup Gerrard chooses for that, but he surely cannot put out a seriously weakened team. This would bring the league into disrepute, and if you think a reserve lineup would annoy City fans, imagine what Everton and Leeds fans would have to say about it. It could realistically cost them their Premier League survival. Villa are at home, their final home game of the season, and there is a duty to play a strong team and entertain the fans before the obligatory lap of thanks. Yes, he may rest Watkins and Coutinho, for example, but there has to be many first-teamers picked. And then they must play again under 3 days later, or Gerrard must play backup players. City have had a week off. This means fatigue and ease, helped with the team having a couple of days away. And who knows, the odd injured defender might just make it back, allaying fears further. Villa themselves are down to two fit centre-backs, so have their own defensive issues. Hopefully the fatigue issue becomes more and more relevant as the game progresses. So even if there is frustration in the first halves, City have more of an advantage later in the match. But what about the other players in that Villa side, away from Coutinho, or perhaps even Danny Ings? Imagine your Tyrone Mings, to use a random example. I could have used Konsa, but to allay your fears further, he is out for the season. And if Callum Chambers is his replacement, I would hope that is a defensive pairing City can destroy. Anyway, imagine you're him. Are you really hell-bent on destroying City's title challenge? Is that your oxygen? I would argue for many players that is not the case, that the desire to hand Liverpool the title is not particularly strong. There is no incentive to play well and win beyond their normal professionalism and desire to succeed. So if, for example, City were 2 goals up midway through the second half, would most of the Villa team be that bothered about getting back into the game? I'm hoping not. Anything else? Well, Pep has beaten Villa every time he's played them. Every time the Premier League title race has gone to a final day, the team who started the day on top ended the day on top. Villa weren't great in the last game against Palace, and as Gerrard has to mix and match, I'm more than happy with 36-year-old Ashley Young lining up against us on Sunday. I'd rather 37-year-old Fernandinho wasn't lining up against him. So has that helped calm the nerves, everyone? Nah, me neither. There's no way to, really. Just remember that despite that penalty, City could easily have lost to West Ham last weekend, and then we'd be really sweating about goal difference too. And also remember that there are worse teams we could end the season playing. There's no easy way to do this. We're all just sweating, twitching and getting distracted at work before Sunday, at which point I would drink as much as possible before kick-off, for medicinal purposes, of course. Fingers crossed, I would have given anything to already be champions, but if we win at home for the first time in 8 years, then that provides a better story, better memories and a better narrative than accrues to the title. Here's hoping one of the best teams in the world can focus and finish off the job on Sunday.
Hi, this is Gary Cook, and you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast.
That was Howard Hockin, and we're going to finish with one listener question. It comes from Nick Myers on the emails. He says, could you talk about the EDS and under-18s and the prospects for the future integration into the first team? I'm interested in this, Dan, because we very rarely dedicate any time to the EDS and the under-18s on this show anymore. Are there any players currently there at City that you feel like you have a genuine chance of seeing in the first team? Because it's felt like for so long that's not been the case. And then Phil Foden arrives.
Yeah, I don't know, really. It's a tough one because obviously we've seen over the past couple of years, you know, the likes of Cole Palmer coming through. You know, he looked really good in the first team last year. He looked like a first team quality player. We've seen James McAtee. There's a lot of excitement about him and he's looked good in the sort of flashes that we've seen of him. CJ Egan Riley came off the bench against Newcastle the other week and looked solid. He's looked good in the cup competitions as well. You know, you've got like Luke Mbete, you've got Wilson Esbrand, he's looked good as well. You just don't know whether any of these players are going to get the chance, though, really. You know, I was thinking the rumours the other day about Gundogan leaving. Does that mean that we would just sell him and maybe McAtee steps up a grade and takes his place in the first team? Or does City immediately sign another player to take his place and then McAtee's in the same place that he is? He might get a few minutes in the Carabao Cup or the FA Cup next season and that's it, really. And then we're still none the wiser as to what kind of future these players have. I just think we're at the point as a club where we've got some good talented young players, but they're not necessarily being blooded for the first team. They're just being blooded to kind of be in and around the first team a little bit. And then if it doesn't work out, which it probably won't, let's be honest with the vast majority of them, then they'll be sold on to somebody else for, you know, maybe a tidy profit. So it's like at the moment you would say Cole Palmer is probably the only one who seems to have a bit of a pathway, but even that pathway has got a lot of obstacles in the way. So it's just a tricky situation for these young players. I feel a bit sorry for them.
Yeah. Adam, I'm interested as well, because like we've spent all season talking about how this squad is probably a little bit on the small side. And then Dan's just reeled off a list of names there that may have been able to come in and play 45 minutes against, you know, Burnley, Wolves, Crystal Palace, someone like a team in the middle of the table, and, you know, do all right. Should there have been more chances for them this season, or is it very much a case of Guardiola just can't take that risk?
Yeah, one of my biggest frustrations is the lack of game time for EDS players, and I think Pep has now recently rightfully got the praise for the way he handled the Foden situation when people from outside the club were clamouring for Foden to get minutes and or to be loaned out to get those minutes if he wasn't getting the first team. I mean, we've not even mentioned Liam Delap, who I thought could have done a job when things weren't going our way, and certainly in the absence of an out-and-out striker in the squad. And you think if we've not got a striker in the squad and Liam Delap's chances are being halted to get into the first team. I know he's had some injuries, but it's a real frustration of mine. Like, the door does seem to be closed, although I could contradict myself and say, but look at Phil Foden and his path to the... But it does seem to be that if you're going to get minutes under Pep, it's either going to be the first half of the season when we're in all the cup competitions, or you need to be ridiculously, ridiculously good. And that's like the Phil Foden level. And it just frustrates me that if I was a young player at City and I'd try and take my City supporting hat off at the minute, would you stick around? I mean, you've got the best coach, the best facilities, the best teammates to learn from, but how much do you value that above minutes on the pitch in terms of your overall footballing career? And that's a question that I think a few fans, I don't want to speak to for all City fans, but I certainly share a frustration that I'd like to see more homegrown players, just from that kind of someone who plays for us and plays for the shirt like we would. But then at the expense of how many trophies would that cost to get young, you know, Mancunian players on that pitch? At what price do you pay for that? And I could probably contradict myself and say I'm not willing to forego a trophy for the minutes of a young Mancunian, but yet again, I'll still complain all season until that happens.
Yeah, I was going to say though, Adam, if there's one thing I don't want is a young player on the pitch playing like I would. Goodness me! So one of the worst ideas ever. That I've seen me play. It's not a good sight.
I mean your desire, David.
Dan, the academy. Do you think it's reached the level that it needs to be at for players to make it at City? And I don't mean that as a criticism of the academy, because there was when the EDS was kind of set up as the EDS and not just kind of like the under 18s or whatever it used to be called, when they moved it all over to the CFA, there was kind of this expectation that it would be generating first team players week after week for, you know, for 30 years sort of thing. And I remember having to dampen expectations at the time and going, look, it needs time. It needs time to be able to build and to develop and to, you know, to be able to get a batch of players to the level where they might be able to make it into City's first team. And as much as we've talked about there being a lack of opportunities there, you did just list off a load of players who have made senior appearances for City this season. So is the academy actually now up to the level where it's starting to get those players into a position where they can compete at City?
Yeah, it's funny we're talking about this actually, because I've been reading Nader Manura's new book this week, which is really good, by the way. And he's talking about his time when he came through the academy at City, you know, when Jim Cassell was in charge, and they brought through all these players like Anua, Micah Richards, Michael Johnson, Stephen Ireland, you know, all those players, that really good crop of young players that we had. And at the time, those players got chances because it was a necessity. We didn't have a pot to piss in as a club. We needed those academy players to fill the first team, basically, didn't we? And that's why those players got chances. Now, in the current guys, those players might still be brought through the academy, but they wouldn't get in the first team, or they wouldn't see nearly as many first team minutes as they did. And we've got a situation now where we've probably got the best crop of young players that we've ever had. You know, maybe maybe you might say the 1986 Youth Cup winning team was as good, but you know, maybe this is better, these group of players, you know, McAtee and Palmer and the like, and Delap and stuff like that. But the pathway is just not there in the same way. And you wonder if it's ever going to be the case, really. And you kind of wonder, not what the point of the academy is, because we know what the point of the academy is. It's to produce footballers to be able to, you know, create a bit of an ecosystem within the club that we can that brings a bit of money in, and you know, these players are not going to be cut adrift, are they? They're going to have good careers wherever they end up. I just wonder if we can be a bit more smarter with the loan system sometimes, and maybe get players out on loan to Premier League clubs if we can. There was a story today, in fact, about Southampton are interested in taking Delap and Bazunu on loan next season. And that, we never do that, do we? We never send players on loan to Premier League clubs. They always end up, like Tommy Doyle, for example, like he's a good one who looked really good a couple of years ago, and you wonder if he's ever actually going to play for the first team again now. He went on loan to Hamburg last season. It didn't work out. He's gone to Cardiff. He's done quite well there. Get him out to a Premier League club if we can next season, see what he can do. You know, get Delap out there, you know, even like McAtee or someone like that, get him out there and see what they can do. That's the only way we'll know whether they're going to be good for City, because they're just not going to get the opportunities because the club doesn't need them.
Yeah, I mean, the other side of that as well, Adam, is City will quite happily turn around and say, well, you know, the academy isn't here to, you know, to build a first 11. It's here to give these players careers in football. And if that means that they have a career in League Two, then they have a career in League Two. So that's a success story for City's academy. It's not, yeah. it's not, oh, they didn't make it in the Premier League. They didn't make it at City. Because let's be honest, the vast majority of these players aren't going to make it at City.
Yeah, I heard when the CFA was rebranded around the time you alluded to, I don't know whether it was this term I'm going to use was in derogatory or, you know, a positive point, but that I heard it was going to be like a conveyor belt of football, in that they would nurture these young men, make them media savvy, make them physically savvy in terms of being able to compete at the top level, and then be shipped out. And that's almost horrendous to speak as human beings. You've got to remember, these young lads are human beings behind this education and behind this system of, you know, every age group's going to play the same way up until the first team and then get shipped out. And the buy-in from other clubs would be that they get a more rounded individual into their teams that's been educated at the highest level, which City want that academy to be. But yeah, this conveyor belt of footballers just kind of, I don't think the selling point was ever going to be that they're all going to be, like you say, 11 City players, all from the academy. It's going to be one or two if they're good enough. And if they're slightly just not good enough, then they get shipped out, and they're a valuable asset in terms of some money coming in to balance the books as well. I think we've done some real good business from the academy. If you just take your, you know, hat off and just look at it from a business point of view, it's actually a great, you know, money-making tool. And that's, don't really sit well with me when I hear those words coming out of my mouth, to be honest, when you think these are young lads. But they're certainly not going to be cut adrift, like Dan said. They're going to be assets for other clubs because they've had the best education, the best facilities, in the best arena. So, you know, any young lad would jump at the chance to join City's academy because they know what they're going to get out of it at the end of it. I just think the door seems to be shut unless you're an absolute elite level for City's first team.
Yeah, just thinking about that though, Dan, I can't think of, are there any academy graduates out there that are playing elsewhere that you kind of feel that's one that got away? Maybe Jadon Sancho.
I mean, there's that Bino Gittins, who's at Dortmund, who looks really good, who played really well in their UEFA Youth League team this year. But no, I can't think of it. I mean, you're going back to, like, you know, do you remember when Brandon Barker was all the rage, when people were saying he was going to be the next big thing, and where, I don't even know where he is now. Yeah, and Denis Suarez and people like that. And I remember Alex Garcia, people, you know, he got some minutes in the first team under Guardiola, didn't he? And I think he's playing like Spanish second division now. So it happens quite often that players just don't, you know, fulfill the potential that they show in their early years. But I think, like, I'm looking at like Conor Gallagher, who was sent out on loan from Chelsea to Crystal Palace this year, has done extremely well for Crystal Palace, and will probably go back to Chelsea and play for Chelsea next season. That's what I would like to see, one of our players go and do well for a Premier League team, and then we go, oh, actually, he is really good, let's get him back. But I think Guardiola is more keen to keep the players close, training with him and, you know, learning from him, than going out and learning something else. And I don't know if that is necessarily the right strategy if you want to get young players into your first team, but I don't know if that is actually the aim of the academy for City, really.
Yeah, Yeah. City fans, Adam, used to hang their hopes, as Dan said, on youngsters who would eventually go on to not make it. There's a whole list of players that that you can talk about where City fans have said that, you know, he's the next big thing. The one I always think of is the classic one is John Guidetti. Has that changed though now? That list of players that Dan talked about at the start, that do they all have a genuine chance of making it at City?
Yeah, I think Foden's the poster boy for that now, and he's the proof that you can make it if you reach those levels. I'm really guilty of pinning all my hopes on a young... I've got this romantic idea that like all 11 are going to be from the academy and they're all going to be City fans and they're all going to die for the shirt. And it really, in reality, it doesn't end that way. So I think Palmer showing is good enough. I'd have him in with no questions asked. I'm desperate for Delap to... the way he finishes, you know, chances we've been crying out for, whether he can do it at this level, we'll never know because he's not been loaned out to a Premier League club and he's not got the right amount of minutes in ours. I look back to the Bournemouth game he played last season. He scored with one of his first touches into the top corner. And I was saying, yeah, he's ready. I'm very guilty of, you know, putting these young lads on the pedestal and then nothing materialising. But I think Foden's shown those lads that there is a way to into the first team. You just got to be really, really ridiculously good. So I'll put, if you ask me for a hot take now, I'd say Palmer and probably Delap.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed that is something we can be talking about next season as two of the star players of the new City squad. That brings this Blue Moon podcast to a close. Thanks to my guests, Dan Burke.
Thank you very much.
And Adam Carter.
You're welcome.
If you'd like some more to listen to or just to take your mind off Sunday in the run-up to the final game of the season, we've got 10 months' worth of Patreon shows available to listen to now. They're a combination of formats all centred around nostalgia and they're all available for everyone who supports the show by £2 a month. This week's episode was a City Heaven, City Hell. It was Neil from the Beyond the 90 LCFC podcast joining me and City fan Bob Toole to reminisce about four matches between City and Leicester. Too good, too bad each. Here's a short clip.
The people I sit with at the ground, our mate Casey, you know, David.
Yeah.
After everyone finished celebrating, he was just telling everyone around us, "Oh, this dickhead was saying don't shoot," and just made me feel like I was the only person in the world that had said that. But obviously, as you've alluded to, it's become a bit of a meme and Aguero, and I think even Kompany said in a post-match interview that he kind of heard it from the crowd, like the don't shoot, just sort of big collective kind of sort of intake of breath maybe, and you can see that in the way he plays, like he shapes a shoot then hesitates and does it again and just goes for it. So very glad he did, really. One thing as well I love, I don't know whether you've noticed this when you've watched the highlights of the goal back before, about 30 to 40 seconds after the goal goes in, you can hear the crowd sort of lose their breath, almost like take a big intake of breath when they watch the replay in the ground, and you can sort of hear it.
Yeah, there's something amazing, isn't there, about 40 odd thousand people all going ooh at the same time, just like that sort of under your breath sort of ooh, that noise, but magnified by 40,000 is fantastic. That was a clip of this week's bonus podcast. You can get that and every bonus episode from this season on our Patreon page right now. Sign up to patreon.com/bluemoonpodcast. You'll also get extended interviews and ad-free episodes on there as well. It's just £2 a month. Our next podcast will be the live show. That'll be out in the middle of next week. But if you'd like to be in the audience on Monday evening, then go and take a look at our Twitter feed for details on the tickets. Fingers crossed it's a celebration, and fingers crossed for Sunday. Come on, City.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please support the show. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.